Hi, everyone. My name is Kevin Puckett. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 1st of 2014. I was born in Kilkenny, Ireland, 20 minutes outside of Belfast, and brought here when I was three. I started drinking at an early age due to Irish tradition with my dad, and didn't think I had a problem then, because it hadn't taken its toll yet. Whenever I look back now, I had a time even from then, because I took that first drink with my dad and thought, wow, I want more. And then it got up into whenever I was 13, 14, partying with middle school kids and partying with people that I really shouldn't have been around, come to think of it. And I was always one that threw the parties just to make friends and just to make people happy. And an excuse for me to drink as well without consequence, because I didn't have to go anywhere. And then all the way through my high school career, started smoking weed, doing a lot of drugs along with it. And that's just a small part of my story that I'm going to keep it to alcohol. Whenever I got to the rooms the first time, I was 20 years old, beaten, bruised, broken, and I'd stayed sober for a while, or what I thought was sober, but I had never worked the steps. And the entire 6 years that I stayed dry, let's call it that, not sober, that I stayed dry for 6 years. And I was married to a wonderful woman. One thing that I haven't shared with many people is whenever we were married for 6 years, I had my daughter, she'll be five this year. And then about a year and a half after she was born, we were supposed to be having another son. And he was born, and 2 days later he passed away. He had a hole the size of a big pin in the side of his heart that they couldn't fix. And I thought I had a higher power then, and I thought that I knew my life would be unmanageable with alcohol, but I didn't care at that point. I just didn't want to feel that way anymore. I just lost a big piece of me, something that I had cared, that even though he was only 2 days old, I loved my son. And I made it for 3 days, cursing God every minute of those 3 days, before I went back out. I stayed out for about a year and a half. And then that's why I only have 16 months sober, roughly. And whenever I came back in this time, my sponsor told me that you have to find, first of all, you have to admit to yourself that you're powerless over alcohol. I already had that problem kicked. I just destroyed a couch, a hot tub, broke a shower and fell out and broke the toilet with my ribs. Yeah, I had that was powerless part down. And that was on October 31st of 2014 whenever that happened. November 1st, a friend of mine came to my house and was talking to me and said, why don't we go to a meeting? And I said, yes. And I thank God for her, even to this day. She's still a really good friend of mine in the program. And we went to the meeting, and while we were at the meeting, I got my first sponsor from coming back into the program. His name is Bobby. He's okay with me sharing that. And he took me through my first three steps, and I got stuck on my fourth step because I did not want anybody to know all the crap that I had done. I was scared of it to the point that it almost took me out. And then somebody suggests maybe you switch sponsors to somebody you can trust. And I did, and that's actually when I came to the Rock for the first time. Less than, I think it was 2 weeks later, I came to the Rock with my then sponsor. And here at the Rock, I did my third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, and seventh step here. I did my fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh after the four-step workshop. The power of the steps, right after that, I felt like a refrigerator had been lifted off my back. And I could walk around, my shoulders held up a little higher. And then whenever it came to my amends, one of those, the wife I had, she divorced me during all that. So, shocker there, right? She didn't want to be with a drunk. But during all that, I had, like, through the divorce and all that, I was getting sober whenever our divorce was finalized. And so we're going through it, and I had to make amends to her. I didn't do anything to her. And then thinking back, yeah, I did a lot of stuff. So I made amends to her. I made amends to everybody that I had on my list that I could without injuring myself, them, or which there was a few that are living amends because of that. One of the living amends was God. Because I was pissed at him. And for a long time, I thought I had forgiven him. But in talking with a friend of mine here at the Rock, actually last night, I realized that I was still holding something in. I hadn't forgiven God, and I hadn't forgiven myself for getting mad at God. But because of the Rock here, and because of the program, I have a peace and serenity today that I can't imagine. In the big book, I can't remember exactly where it's at, but it says that families can be restored. It doesn't guarantee. That's definitely not a guarantee, but you know the wife that divorced me? We are now back engaged, and she and my four-year-old daughter live with me today. And by the way, who marries the same woman twice? Oh, yeah, drunk. But because of my higher power, because of my ability to work the steps, and because of you guys here in the program, I have a chance at life today, a sober life, and one that I don't have to worry about going to pick a drink or a drug. I don't have to chase the dope man. Hey, man, can I get some? Or go to the liquor store. Yeah, I don't have to do that today and take a risk of getting a DUI. Some of the guys last night were talking about they had left to go to the store for a minute and came back, and there was a roadblock. They said, well, you got your seatbelts on. That's the only thing they had to worry about. Back in the day, that was... Wait, where's the dope? Where's the booze? I got to hide this so that I don't get arrested. But because of the steps and the power of the program, I don't have to do that today. My situation is the same. Do I got my seatbelt on? My name is Kevin. Thank you for letting me share.
Good morning. I'm Wayne. I'm an alcoholic. What a great sight looking out there, all you guys. Beautiful morning, Saturday in the spring, and we're all here doing what we need to do, taking care of ourselves, making sure we go back to those we love a little better in service, loving them a little more, and appreciating everything we've been given through this program. My sobriety date is April 5th, 1995. My story before I got in the program is not a whole lot different than any of us drunks. My first drink, I had a blackout drunk. After that, I kind of tried to temper it. And through my drinking career, it was actually harder most of the time to not make an ass of myself than actually taking the drink. I had to work harder on trying to temper myself at the party, at the business meeting, and then as soon as that was over, I was off to the races. And for a while it was fun. It gave me liquid courage. It introduced me to a lot of things I was always open to try. Drugs are part of my story. My problem with drugs, especially cocaine, was it just allowed me to drink more. I like my money too much, so I just decided, screw that, let's just drink. But through my drinking career, you know, trouble began rather early, but I never recognized it as trouble. I just thought it was stupidity. Then I attributed it to, I'm just crazy and probably need a shrink. Nah, I won't do that, I'll just drink. So it went on and on. My first big challenge of drinking was early on. I was 26. I was a high school teacher in Cherokee County and went to a party early May with a bunch of other teachers, and of course we drank and did a lot of other little things, and on my way back decided to stop at the school and help myself to some plants. I was a horticulture teacher and we grew ferns and all that, so I helped myself to a bunch of plants. Never remembered it, and the next Monday, first day back at school, I got a call from the school I stopped by. I had taught there and then I moved to another school. And the principal at that school wanted to see me, and my ego was, oh, they want me back. Driving up to the school, it dawned on me. The blackout went away, and I remembered what I had done. And sadly enough, I loved teaching, and I loved that job. I was fired. I couldn't even really tell the truth. They asked me to bring everything back that I had taken, and I said, oh, I didn't take much, and I brought half of it back trying to earn my story and make it right. But that was where I was at. Even that early, that's what drinking started to do to me. I went through all the geographic tour changes. I tried to do a travel around the United States. I tried to run away from Wayne. It just didn't work. Came back to Atlanta, and for the next 30 years, I worked for a great garden center in Atlanta. And early on in that career, as Bill says in his story, I had arrived. I found something that really made me tick. I loved it. My ego took off. My drinking took off. And I was just it and all about it. Through those 30 years, the alcoholism progressed. A number of DUIs. Lots of other embarrassing moments. Unfortunately, many of them I remember, because the blackouts always seem to just go away just at the wrong time. Oh, yeah, that's right. So needless to say, March 6th of 1995, I decided after 18 months of not drinking because of the second DUI and the drinking counselor told me that I wasn't an alcoholic, you see. Told me I wasn't an alcoholic, but at the bottom of his letter for the judge at that time said if I were Wayne, I'd never drink again. But I didn't read that part. I just read, I'm not an alcoholic, yay. So on March 6th, there was still a bottle of Absolut in the freezer. I was mad at the world. Decided, it can't hurt. I was back to the races within a half hour, back in my car, back downtown to all assorted places that I used to hang out at. And somewhere between one bar closing at 2 o'clock in the morning and going to the bar that stayed open all night, I hit the same damn telephone pole I hit 18 months ago. And, you know, it wasn't a coincidence, but that moment, I looked to my left and there was a cop arresting somebody else for a DUI. And I realized I was had, And I lifted my hands up and I said, okay, God, whatever. Okay, God, and I felt it. I had no clue what that meant at that moment in time. And for the next 30 days, it was probably the most miserable 30 days of my life, trying to wade my way out, lie my way out. My excuses were I went downtown to see a friend that was dying from AIDS, and I was so upset I drank, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I believed my own BS. I had gotten so good at lying, I believed my lies, and I thought everybody else would. But on the outside, I was just this great guy, you know, cleaned up well, had a great profession with the company I worked for, just a big shot. But in the inside, I was rotten to the core. I didn't want to live, and I couldn't die. I was in that nowhere place. The last week of March, I met this little feisty drug and alcohol counselor, and I can use her name because she saved my life. Her name's Irene Bernstein, a little Jewish lady. And I went in there and I told her my lie about why I was out and all that. And she looked at me and she called me an effing liar to my face. Not me. Needless to say, she asked me a few other good questions, like, are you smart? Yeah, I went to college and I did all this. She said, well, what smart person would find themselves in jail 3 times, losing everything they had? That's smart? I was like, She said, here's the deal. I won't see you again until you go to 3 AA meetings. And I got the sheet to sign. And I said, okay, I've been had. That was on a Tuesday. I called Central AA office in Atlanta, found a meeting on Wednesday night, and you'll see a little more humor to this a little later, but I found a men's meeting at 8111. I said, that's probably good for me. I'll go to the men's meeting. I went to that meeting, pulled in the parking lot, and walked up to the front of that clubhouse. And I trembled inside. I knew I was done. And this wonderful person, many of you know him, he's gone to the greater meeting upstairs, Bill Montgomery, dark glasses, he couldn't see very well, straw hat full of pins, just looked like he was a crazy man. And he grabbed me by my arm because I was getting ready to bolt and said, you're new. How do you know? Deer in headlights. Anyway, he asked me, he said, just follow me. Come on. And he took me in. We sat. And that first meeting made a lot of sense to me. It just hit home. The shares, the experience that these guys, they were talking about me. The only thing I didn't like is they laughed about totaling their car and they still had a beer left in the car, and while they were waiting for a cop, they drank that beer, you know. And I could relate, but I didn't think it was funny anymore. You see, I had a lot of things going on, and I was in deep doo-doo. I knew there was a lot of consequences to come about. The one step I saw was step 9. It was my eye level, and I went, uh-oh, I'm dead. I can never, never do that because I knew where I'd been. I knew what I did. But as we all know, it starts at step 1. You see, I knew I was powerless over alcohol after that first meeting. I understood that. I understood it was the first drink, not the third. I understood it was whatever I drank the first drink, not that if I drank beer first and then waited till I wouldn't drink as much. I had all those excuses. I also had the blame game. It was everybody's fault. If I hadn't met these people at work that drank so much, I wouldn't have drank. It was everybody's fault, lots of excuses. The unmanageability was hard at first because I still had a wonderful home. I had that job. I was in a relationship. It was going on 6 years. So all those things that didn't seem like there was unmanageability, but the more meetings I went to and the more clarity I got. I understood. Because my life was so hard to live. I lied so much. I couldn't remember who I told what. I didn't remember where I'd show up. If somebody that would remember me from a drunk or a blackout. So I was living in fear, and that was unmanageability. My early childhood, I was a cradle Episcopalian, altar boy, embedded in church. But somewhere around 17, when I found the fun thing called sex and started doing things that were not considered acceptable, I found myself running away from the church because I couldn't talk about it. So my God became just a 911 God. Okay, God, help me. Help me get the foxhole prayers. But I remembered seeing the word God in the steps, and I remembered my cry of that last night. And I kind of laughed and chuckled. So I had to reinvent this God of my understanding because you gave me permission. It didn't have to be anybody else's concept. It didn't even have to be my old concept. And I found a higher power that I could depend on. In the beginning, it was your higher power because I saw it working in you. And then gradually, it became my higher power. It gave me the courage to move on and the decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of that God was gradual, but I was 70 days sober. My MO of my drunks and drunkalogs was always to drink and then go in town and then basically cheat on my relationship. It didn't make any difference. I had no conscience, no anything. So I was everywhere doing all the wrong things. So when I got the blood work done and the doctor's office called me at 70 days sober, I went into the office and the doctor knocked on the door before he came in and I heard him clear his throat. And I went, As he walked in the office, I just heard him say, "I'm so sorry, but you're HIV positive." At that moment, I left my body. I moved. I could just feel the sense. God lifted me out of this body. I felt sympathy and empathy for this doctor that had to tell me this news because of my behaviors. But at that very moment, I knew God had a purpose for me. I understood his will because I shouldn't be alive. And had I found that out before I got sober, I wouldn't be here today. And that was the catalyst to jumping in both feet doing these steps because there was a purpose. I didn't know what, but there was a purpose. My fourth step was incredible. My poor first sponsor. But he walked me through it. And the big book's promise is we can look the world in the eyes again. You see, in the beginning, in most of my last few years in drunks, I couldn't look anybody in the eyes. You see, that thought is you could see through me. You could see the devil in me. Especially if they were religious. I just kept my eyes away from them because I just didn't want you to know who I was. My head came up. I knew I wasn't any different than anybody, and all those things that I did, they weren't bad. They were sick. But I could change that through the rest of the steps. So those steps moved on. I was entirely ready. I asked God to remove them. I didn't believe I was selfish and self-centered in the beginning, but my fourth step just showed me boom, 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 everywhere. Resentments, I copped a resentment if you looked at me wrong. That fourth step gave me a prayer. It told me that not everybody is well. Other people are sick too, to pray for them. That started to work. My life was getting better. And all the consequences from that last DUI started to be easier to handle. They weren't easy. All the sentencing, all the money, but they were easier to handle because I had we. It wasn't I anymore. The ninth step, it was a little tricky. At that time, I was in a relationship of 6 years. I had to make a very awkward amend because I had to go home and talk about the fact of I was HIV positive. I got the how did that happen? I had no clue this person was that blind to my not coming home on weekends and all that, but unfortunately, I was a good liar at that time. So I had to move through that one, and it was very awkward, but we moved through it pretty well. The other people at work, all those were easy. And my sponsor told me, pick the easiest one first and move through them, because as I worked through them, they got easier to handle. A lot of my amends were living amends, staying sober one day at a time. 10th step, checklist. I found the 11th step. And it fascinated me, and I started to work it in that first round. Now, here I was 7 months sober, but it started to build. I started to improve my conscious contact with the God of my understanding. And then the magic of the 12th step, working with others, I started to work with others. I didn't think I was capable of sponsoring, but I did a lot of service work. I came down to this rock at 6 months sober. Went to sex and sobriety, lost my terminal uniqueness because I wasn't the only gay man in AA, ego. I was just full of it. But I also saw how big this program was. It wasn't just my home group anymore of 20 people. AA was big and it was powerful, and I was immersed in it. So the steps continued. And I found a new sponsor because my company had gone from just a family-owned business to corporate America, so I had to move into a sponsor that had experience with corporate America. And we worked through a lot of things and a lot of fears. But the 11th step, folks, became my magic. It became my strength. It told me what to do at night. You see, and at night, we take a little inventory. I found a little pad, and I started taking inventory. And then one night, resentful at Brian. Next night, resentful at Brian. Next night, still resentful. You know, we had to talk about it. Did I put everything into life I should have, or was trying to steal some things for myself? Well, I was all about me. And I started to recognize my patterns, my habits, and I started to depend on the God of my understanding. And somewhere around 6 years sober, I found my way back to the church of my childhood and reunited with the God of my understanding, and my life changed. I did a fourth and fifth step with a priest and dealt with my sexuality for the first time in 47 years of my life. And became whole. Because it wasn't who I was. I'm Wayne, I'm an alcoholic. Just a part of me. And God loves me. Working with others has been powerful. And God has a great sense of humor because he puts people in front of me that are me. I'm obstinate, arrogant, unteachable at times. And then I understand it better when I'm working with somebody else. That's my timer. I'll end with this, folks. The magic of the steps, that's what this is about. I work the steps twice to three times a year. It's not just a one-time thing. I'm a one white chip wonder. I'll be 21 years sober shortly. And it's only by the grace of God and you men. And do I still have troubles today? Yes. Somewhere around 13 years sober, my 20-year relationship dissolved. I lost a job of 30 years. But God was with me. They weren't big deals anymore. Because what did I do? I went to a meeting. I talked about it. I found men that showed me the way. Bankruptcy. I learned how to handle bankruptcy at this rock from other men that went through it. I'm a small business owner. I learned how to run a business from you men. Now that's God working in my life and you people. And that's only through the steps, my willingness today to do what I can do. Provided I stay out of the way. You see, because I'm not perfect. It's not a perfect program that I run. But I do my best one day at a time. And this is the place that it happens. This is my 40th rock. You heard our first speaker, Kevin, talk about it happens here. I get that wake-up call. The spiritual awakening started here and it continued. And as it says in the big book, that spiritual experiences, mine is of an educational variety. It's mostly through osmosis. Sitting on my ass in enough meetings, I learn if I stay teachable. But I can't thank you men enough because you've given my life back. I can't tell you how good it is today. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. My name is Rocky and I'm an alcoholic. Y'all look good tonight, or this morning it is, isn't it? My mind gets ahead of myself sometimes. Don't get excited. My sponsor sent me a text this morning and reminded me our little prayer that we say, help me share what I need to share. Help me hear what I need to hear. And keep an open mind. And he knows I get excited when I get in front of a bunch of AA people. And it's really funny because I spent 26 years in the military. I briefed vice presidents, four-star generals, and all kinds of people, and never really wavered. But when I start talking about my heart and the heart of other people, I get excited. And that's what it is. It's my adrenaline going. So if my voice shakes a little bit, please look over it. The message I hope will come out because God's going to put it out. Anyways, I said, I'm Rocky and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Fayetteville, North Carolina, not originally. I was born in Casper, Wyoming, actually. I belong to the SOS, Seekers of Sobriety Group. That's my home group. And my sobriety date is February 11th, 1974. And, you know, I had Wayne up here and Kevin up here. Kevin's pretty new in the program, and he was hard and steady and good, and Wayne was calm, cool, and collective, and I just hope I can be the same. But, you know, I took my first drink when I was 13, and it's kind of funny because at that time we lived on a ranch right on the Idaho-Utah border, and on the 4th of July we would have a rodeo celebration. And when you was turned 13, you got to ride a bull that was 18 months old. And I got on that sucker and I rode it. I don't know why, but I did. Anyway, I got off and went back to the corral in the chutes, and here the old guys were, you know, the ones you look up to when you're 13, the 19 and 20 year olds that get in trouble all the time. Anyway, they had about a half a glass of whiskey. And they said, well, you rode the bull, your prize is you get to drink this. You know, my story when I say that, especially the first few years, I say, yeah, I took it and I drank it and I got drunker than Cooties Brown. Well, the truth is, I took a drink of it, I coughed, I spit, it came out my nose, it tasted terrible. And, you know, so you got to have an honest program, but and then I really didn't drink much because, you know, when you live 60 miles, is your closest town, and 30 of it's on a dirt road, there isn't a lot of stuff around. But I liked the way it made me feel when it took effect. And I didn't have to milk the cows that night because my dad wouldn't let me close to them. So, you know, a couple good things came about. Anyway, my dad sold that ranch and we moved into town. Now, understand, and I say my dad, he's my stepdad. And I'll tell you this because if I think about it when I get to that part of the story, my father was killed in the Second World War, and I really never knew him. He played a big part in my sobriety, and I never knew it until I was in the program about 20 years. And I'll tell you about that when I get to it. But we moved into town, and here I was trying to fit in again. And I was in the 10th grade then, and I hung out with some guys, and on the Saturday or Friday nights, we'd go to football games and we'd all drink. And I started doing that quite regular. When I was a senior, I had an orange. And I worked for a veterinarian, and so I got a syringe. I had an uncle who would buy me anything. So I'd get a pint of vodka, and I'd put it in that syringe, and I'd poke it in that orange. And then, you know, in the afternoon, about 2 o'clock or something, I could start sucking on that orange and get that vodka, and that's the way it was. Yeah, I had a few blackouts in high school. I got into college, and you know, you hear people stand up here and say, I went to college and I drank and I graduated. That wasn't the way it was with me. If I started drinking then, and I was a daily drinker in college, that was it for the day. Because I just wouldn't quit. 2 semesters they put up with me. And at the end of the second semester, they wrote a letter to me and they wrote a letter to my parents. I was going to Weber State and I was living at home. And they said, Rocky probably needs to come back when he's ready. And, you know, in my story, I say, I started college in 1961 and I graduated in 1992. You know, I didn't have to graduate, but it was a thing I wanted to do when I sobered up. But anyway, my dad gave me 2 weeks to move out. And I said, God, how can you do that? You know, my mind was right there. You know, he just kicked me out because I got put out of school. And, you know, I just lied to myself about that. But anyway, the fact is they put up with me all that time when I was drinking, and I didn't know that. Not up here, I didn't. And so I joined the Army. I joined the Army as a daily drinker. You know, I was lucky. We managed to stay in for 26 years. But it was real good. I'm 87 in 7 years, and I'm 85 in 12. And, you know, that was quite a feat. And, you know, that kind of qualifies. And as I work the steps, you know, and we'll go through the steps. You know, step one, admitted we was powerless over alcohol and our lives were unmanageable. Initially, I said that step, but I didn't accept it. And I came off of the 30-day AWOL. The commander was going to put me in jail, or I'd go into treatment. Well, then treatment in the Army was you was locked on a ward in a hospital for 30 days. And that's what you was, locked on a ward in a hospital for 30 days. But anyway, I came out of there. I was introduced to AA. A lady by the name of Lori, she has since passed, come up and told us about AA. And at that time, I was fighting to save a career. You know, you don't go AWOL 30 days as an NCO, come back. That was kind of funny. What led up to that is I was on orders for Germany, and I cleared post. I went into finance. I got 6 months advance pay. It was an E7. That was a lot of money back then even. And went downtown on Hay Street and started drinking. And I don't remember a whole lot about it, but I was in Atlanta, I was in Wisconsin, I was in St. Louis, I was in Chicago. I had all the ticket stubs. That's the only reason why I knew that. I came back in, was down in my favorite bar in Hay Street, and they say, you've been AWOL. I said, AWOL? Hell no, I'm on my way to Germany. Well, I forgot to sign out. And it was a big deal, so I was AWOL. But I was trying to save that career. And done real good. Got through it. Went to see the colonel. He was an 06. And to get my punishment. And my counselor and everybody talked to him. And, you know, he gave me a verbal reprimand. Made all the bad time good time except 5 days. And I walked out of there. Oh, yeah, see there? I knew that would happen. I'm too good. And that's the way I felt about myself. I was a good worker and a good soldier when I was sober. That wasn't too often. But kind of like Wayne, I cleaned up pretty good. And so I got a sponsor and started working. you know, we was working the program. So he was working the program with me. I was listening to him, and some of it I didn't. You know, I never really did get the first step. And of course, I didn't get any place. But one thing that I did do is, you know, when I was I had a family when I was drinking. I didn't say that, but we had divorced. And anyway, I went to an AA meeting. Rick took me to an AA meeting, and it was a women's transitional home, halfway house. And I met my present wife, and she was there. And we got together and we talked, and you know what we do. And so we both had 15 minutes of sobriety, and we went and got married. And that was fun. But I mean, you know, and I spent about 18 months trying to make her my first wife, and she spent about the same number of time trying to make me her first husband. And that didn't work, you know. I didn't want to be that person, and neither did she. But I was really in debt. All that money I owed Uncle Sam. And I was, you know, we wasn't getting a lot of money. You know, we had a place to live because she owned a couple of duplexes. But, you know, when it come to the light bill and stuff like that, it was still pretty struggle. And you know, so when I was growing up, I played a lot of pool. Had a pool table on the ranch, and I'd practice a lot in the wintertime. That and pinochle. But anyway, I said, I can get some money. Let me have $20. I went downtown and played some pool and won it. You know, felt real good. I was on cloud nine because I was sober, and I haven't been this sober that long in my life. And, you know, I picked up my six-month chip. Still really hadn't worked that first step. And one night I said, oh, I got to go get some money. Went in the bar. I had no intention to drink or anything, just like any time else. And I walked up to the bartender, and I said, give me a beer. You know, it just came out of nowhere. You know, today I know that as if I'm not working a solution, I don't have a defense against that first drink. And I didn't, and I wasn't working any solution. And so after a while, they picked me up, took a couple of months, they picked me up off the tracks down on Hay Street because I was tired of it. And I thought I'd end it. I started drinking. I was in a blackout when I was on the tracks. But I said, this will be the last night I'll just go out and do something, start drinking. Anyway, they picked me up off the tracks at Hay Street, took me back out to Womack Army Hospital and locked me on that damn ward again. And, you know, to kind of get along with it a little bit, I got out and I wasn't on that cloud nine. But I still didn't believe in that first step. I didn't drink for about, well, I didn't drink period from that time on, but I lived that way for about 18 months. And every day my mind wanted to put a drink in my mouth. All the discontent, all the fears, and all that stuff was there. And the way I worked the first step is, if I drink, I know I'll die, so I'm not going to drink. And that was a fear. And I ended up in as much trouble not drinking as I ever did drinking. And so I walked out of that colonel's office on the way to the car and said, well, I might as well be drinking. I said, I'll get temporary relief. I know that. And I got my car and I was headed to the NCO club. And I guess my mind was full of whatever it was full of. And, you know, to me right now, today, it was that God was getting me home. And I just drove straight home. And my wife was working at the time, and I was sitting on the couch when she come in, and I told her what happened. And she said, don't you think you ought to call your sponsor? And so I did. And I called Rick up. And he came out, and I started working the steps in earnest. And right then and there, I took that first step, and, you know, in the very soul of my gut, I knew I was an alcoholic and that my life had become unmanageable. And we got on to the second step, and I said, well, I'm screwed here. And he said, "Why, don't you believe in God?" And I said, "No, that's not the problem. I believe in God." I said, "But the things that I have said to God, the things that I had done in the church and all that stuff, he's not going to want to help me." He said, "Well, tell me about it." And I said, "Well, I'm an Episcopalian like Wayne. And I was an altar boy, an acolyte. And when I was 17, I kept going to church because I knew I was going to help that priest drink that wine when it was over, when the communion was over. And that's why I went to church." Well, there was a girl involved. But that's why I went to church. And that's the only reason why I went to church at that time, was to drink that wine. And then later on in life, I told you I was married before and wanted to raise my family. Rocky Jr. was born. He was born a couple months premature. And he died one night, a crib death, when I got him home. He stayed in the hospital quite a while. And me and the mother and my children were out drinking that night. And I was, like always, I start drinking, that's it. And we woke up the next morning and he was dead. You know, I swore to God, to her, and to him, that I'd never drink again. Well, we're not working a solution. You're going to drink again. At least I did. That night I was drunk. It really upset her a lot. She had an emotional breakdown and she had to go in the hospital for a while. And you know, it was more important for me to go downtown and drink than it was to go see her while I was there. And you know, you would think that, well, anyway, that's what it was. And he said, "Well," he said, "do you believe that a higher power would do that?" And I said, "Yeah, I think it would. I'm just not sure." And he said, "Well, why don't you just be willing to accept that maybe he will help you?" And I said, "Okay," and we moved on to the third step. And, you know, I went through the third step and I made that decision. We took that third step prayer. And I said, and we quit, and I said, "There's no amen here." And he says, "No, we'll talk about that later." And I started a fourth step. I wrote out all my fears. I wrote all my resentments. I wrote all my harmfuls, and I wrote all my sexual escapades, how it affected me, what my part of it was. And after I finished the fifth step, and I finished the fifth step with a guy by the name of Bill. He's out of San Antonio, Texas. He was up there, TDY, to Fort Bragg, and I knew he was leaving town, so I grabbed him. He was out at my sponsor's house. And I went over and I took it with him, and I started feeling pretty good. And he said, "Now I want you to go out and think about what you've done to this point in the program, first, second, third, fourth step. And then come back and let's talk about the sixth and seventh step." And we came back, and I came back, and we talked about it, and I said, and we took the seven-step prayer, and I said, "Oh, here's the amen." And we said amen. My mind went back to the third step when I made the decision to turn all that over. You know, at the time, I didn't know what that was. And found out all that in the fourth step and got rid of most of that all that garbage at that time in the fifth step. And then we made my list, me and my sponsor made, well, the list was mainly made when I was doing the fourth and fifth steps. We wrote all that out, and he helped me prioritize it. And I'd done the ninth step. Now, understand, I was in the military. A lot of the people that I harmed and all that stuff had moved away, and there was just no way that I was ever going to be able to make amends to a lot of them. But I remained willing. But the main amend I made for that was that I would be the best soldier I could be. And, you know, it kind of worked out, you know. God seemed fit that even though I was had a bar to re-enlist and all that stuff and was about to get put out of the Army, something happened and they lifted the bar. So I was able to finish that career. And you know, during that time, I was active in the program, had sponsees, went to meetings, did service work as much as I could in the military. The service work was with my group and all that. And I was working 10, 11, and 12, and retired from the military, and got a job at Civil Service. And during that time, I was so full of myself, and I was taking my will back, and I really didn't realize what I was doing. But I was still feeling good, and I was still doing things. I was starting to cut back on my meetings a little bit. Wasn't working with as many sponsees. I called them pigeons back then. And wasn't talking to my sponsor a lot. And then 9/11 happened. And I completely took my will back because I was the director of operations and strategic planning support for Fort Bragg. And I had all this responsibility and I was beating my chest. And all of a sudden, things really start going bad. The fear was getting back in my head. I was discontent. I wasn't happy. I wasn't doing a good job. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, I started thinking of my real dad. And I said, damn, why am I thinking of him? And then my mom died. And so I went home and was burying her, and she had all my dad's stuff in the corner of her cedar chest, and I always knew it was there. And I pulled it out, and here my brother and sister were sitting there, and I opened up his birth certificate, and damn, his birthday was February the 11th. That's my sobriety date, and that's the day. I bawled a little bit, the hairs on my back of my neck and arm just stood straight up. But the message was loud and clear. God says, you get back in the program or you're in trouble, boy. And so I did. I started getting back in the program. I had to get with my sponsor, tell him why I hadn't talked to him in a long time, start telling on myself again, and start meeting with him on a regular basis. And, I had to go back over and work those resentments out, those fears, and I had to do all that over. Today, my life is pretty good. I'm completely retired as far as any working jobs. The women's halfway house that I met my wife in, she wanted to keep that going, so we're running that right now. It's a poor home. And, God seemed fit that Ellie and I can help it out and keep it running. But when it comes to my sobriety today, I told you I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor that has a sponsor that has a sponsor. Now, I'm 73 years old, and you figure all that out. But, I had a couple sponsors during my career, and I always, whenever I was at being transferred overseas or something like that, I always pick up a sponsor. Any newcomers here? Raise your hand. What did I say? I have a sponsor. They're very important because when it comes to my mind and the mind of my family, and believe me, I got a couple of kids and grandkids out there that is really writing some good chapters. And I get excited about that because I want to go pull each one of them out and put some sense in their head, but that don't work. When it comes to dealing with me and my family, I'm not objective and I got to have somebody to talk to. And, I think Steve said last night, and if it was the guy I was looking at in the mirror, it was the idiot. But he's from Jersey, moved down to Fayetteville, and his sponsor is still up in New Jersey. He writes and talks to him all the time. But his sponsor come down every winter, and they go to Myrtle Beach, and they stay down there about 3.5-4 months. And so about once a month, all four of us get together. And here I am, the youngin', So I said, no, we're not going to do this anymore. So I started bringing one of my sponsees. He's a youngin'. But we tell on ourselves. And we tell on ourselves because, my problems are my own making. And when I take my will back, that's when I started having problems. And, to me the solution is honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, keep my mind clear, pray to God, meditate, and help others. And I do that today. I do service work. You know, I chair a board for the central office and kind of stuff like that. But what I really like about it is the transitional home for women. Because my job, other than chairing the board, is to pick them up and carry them to meetings. Anyway, my name is Rock, and I'm an alcoholic, and thank you for your time.